It's the Sleep Well, Stay Well podcast. Here we go. With Malia Jacobson as your host.
Hello, and welcome to the Sleep Well, Stay Well podcast. I'm your host, sleep and health journalist Malia Jacobson. Good morning. I hope that you are doing well wherever you are today. I am saying good morning because it is very early where I am in Washington State. I am recording really, really early in the morning so that I can have a quiet house because my kids are still asleep and I'm trying to make the most of these quiet mornings as I am podcasting from home. And I hope that you are also able to carve out some time for quiet and stillness in your life, even as the summer gets hectic or if you are already ramping up for fall. I hope that you're able to find a little bit of quiet time, even if it means getting up early in the morning or maybe even staying up late. Sometimes that is just what we have to do. So today's episode is a great one. It focuses on an aspect of our health that we may be overlooking with all the focus on hand washing and hand sanitizer and immune health, and that is the health of our brain. When we are all trying to be our healthiest, we may not realize that a key aspect of our health is the health of our brain. And when I heard about the expertise of today's guest, Dr. Tara Linsell, I knew that I had to have her on the podcast. She is just a delight, and she has many, many insights to share with us about keeping our brains healthy and functioning well. And that includes focusing on sleep, which is kind of something that can help improve the health of our brain, but is also an outcome of focusing on keeping our brains healthy. So kind of a chicken and egg scenario, if you will. So let me tell you a little bit more about her. Psychotherapist and brain health expert Tara Linsell, PhD, is a certified mental health and addiction nutrition counselor who specializes in integrative nutrition. She co-created the Mental Health and Addiction Recovery Supplement line, Pro Recovery RX. She specializes in helping clients use natural approaches in nutrition to end panic attacks, overcome anxiety, and shift habits to create the lives that they want. And she's also host of the Kick Off Your Damn Heels podcast. Let's get her on the line. Well, thank you for joining me, Dr. Sell. I'm really glad we were able to connect.
Awesome. Yeah, you can call me Dr. Tara Lynn. That's what I'm pretty well known by.
Dr. Tara Lynn, yes. And when you called and left me a voicemail, my voicemail kept transcribing it as Dr. Carolyn.
Oh, but yes.
I'm sure you get that a lot.
I do. I get that a lot. My name is unique, and I always, people are like, your name is so cool. And I'm like, thank my parents because I had nothing to do with it.
Right. Growing up with a unique name is sometimes a bit of a blessing and a bit of a curse at the same time. Yes. I'm right there with you.
You are. Yes, you are.
Well, I'm so glad that we get to talk to you today. You are a mental health professional and you're a counselor, but you have a really cool specialty, and that is brain health. And you also have an approach that maybe focuses on helping people with anxiety and depression without maybe having to spend hours doing talk therapy, which may be appealing to a lot of people who are overwhelmed by the thought of starting down the path of working with a mental health professional. So can you talk a little bit about your brain love approach and how you work on brain health with people?
And I want to start off by saying, you know, I am a therapist still, so I still do talk therapy. I still believe there's a place for talk therapy and medication. But what I noticed was, you know, people were coming to my office and they were getting sicker and sicker and being prescribed more medications on top of medication. And I decided to do something about that. So I started studying the brain and particularly neurotransmitters and their role in mood particularly. And I came up with the brain love method, where basically we look at neurotransmitter balances or imbalances, right? And then we set a plan that's holistic based on nutrients, amino acid therapy, nutrition, and work on correcting the imbalance. it sounds so easy. I know I'm like oversimplifying what it is that I do, but it's very powerful. And, you know, it's often the missing link, because when people show up to therapy and they're so anxious or so depressed, I can't help them, you know, talk their way out of that or through that in the moment. I mean, of course, there are some things you can do to help someone, but overall, you can't talk your way out of a physiological imbalance. And so that's where I dig into that neurotransmitter rejuvenation with Brain Love. It's really fun. I think it's fun.
Yeah, so. No, it sounds really cool. So can you talk just really quickly, just define what a neurotransmitter is and how that makes the difference in someone's brain health?
Sure. So neurotransmitters are basically your body's chemical messengers, and they impact everything, including mood, in a big way. And there's a lot of different neurotransmitters, but I focus on the bigger ones like serotonin, dopamine, noradrenaline, adrenaline, GABA, glutamate, that type of thing. And also I look at cortisol, your stress hormone. But neurotransmitters are located throughout your entire body. They're not just in your brain, but they're more concentrated there and down in your cerebral spinal fluid. But modern medicine always assumes that, you know, your serotonin is low if you're depressed or anxious. You're still going to get a medication that influences your serotonin only, most frequently. And what we know now is that, like, if you have low serotonin, if you're feeling depressed, you might have low serotonin or high serotonin, your symptoms are going to present similarly. Okay. So unless we know if it's low or high, we really don't know what we're looking at. So some functional labs really help us do the trick. And I tell people all the time that psychology is like the only health profession that doesn't look under the hood, you know. If you go to the ER with a broken leg, they're not going to give you a symptom checklist and diagnose you with a broken leg. They're going to do an x-ray or an MRI. But in psychology, you show up with, you know, a broken brain, essentially, and you're going to get a checklist and a diagnosis and medication. And that's pretty much it. Nobody actually looked to see what was going on, anything underlying, right? And so that's kind of what I'm looking to do, is really kind of dig down and understand what's going on to help a person feel better. And the results have been incredible. That's why I've been doing it for so long.
Right. Well, that makes a lot of sense. It does seem like sometimes our healthcare teams don't function together. So there's the primary care physician, and then there's the mental health team, and they're not talking to one another or sharing labs or information. So
we're very siloed. Yeah. We're very, very siloed. It's so weird, because I think, you know, as a psychotherapist myself, like, there's not a lot of collaboration, and there is a lot of like, oh no, it's my way, it's what I think. And then the doctor's like, no, it's what I think. And you're like, wait, can't we all think on this at the same time? You know, everybody has something to contribute.
Right.
And you know, to this person.
Right. And sometimes what ends up happening, I think, is the person who's under a great deal of stress or experiencing a mental health crisis has the burden of trying to facilitate that communication. Yes. Or be that hub or find answers to things that they, you know, they can't know what they don't know. They're the patient and they're struggling.
Right.
And yet they have to try and be that, that hub, because the communication doesn't happen otherwise. So it can be tough.
There's also a lot of dismissive types of things that happen. Like, if you show up to your doctor's office and you're telling them that you feel so stressed and fatigued, like a very low stress tolerance, and you don't understand why, you know, you'll get a medication probably, but you'll also get just being dismissed, right? Well, you know, you have a full-time job and you have 3 kids and you have, you know, all these things. And you're like, well, that's fine. That's just my life. But why do I feel like I'm freaking out inside every day? You know?
Right.
So this whole idea of dismissing our mental health symptoms, or our stress symptoms, or just, you know, it's just because you have a busy life, you know, that type of thing, that rhetoric has to go away. And we have to really look at, you know, what's going on inside and take a deeper dive into that to really impart change, right? I mean, there's so many prescription medications for health related things. And now there's so many people on prescriptions for mental health related things. And I walk around and I think, you know, in a group of people, you're going to have a handful of people on a psych med, but we're not talking about that, right? We're not. And I think, do all these people have like brain damage? You know what I mean? That they need medication like this, or do we just need to figure out how to get their engine humming again? You know, because stress and nutrition and sleep and all of this impact your neurotransmitters. They impact your overall brain health. Why don't we just work on getting that to function a little bit better than, you know, dampening it down with the medication? And here's my caveat to medication, just so anyone listening, I'm not anti-medication. I just think that we have other things that we can do as well to enhance our moods without just using medication.
Thank you for explaining that. Yes, and to your to your previous point, I think I saw that women particularly have a tough time getting help with health issues, and you mentioned being dismissed. I think it's something like women will struggle with an issue for 6 years before being diagnosed.
Oh my gosh,
is the average. Well,
and pain, women are twice as likely to show up to a doctor's office for mental health issues than men. So it makes me wonder how many men suffer in silence as well.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. There's a huge portion of the population, I think. So I want to dig in a little bit more with how you work with people, but and all of the things that you mentioned. But I'm curious about questions that you're getting more in the past few months that we've been dealing with the pandemic. Is there anything in particular that's coming up more often for you with patients over the past 3 or 4 months?
You know, oddly, things have shifted so much. In the very beginning stages, there was a lot of stress about the unknown, particularly unknown in people's lives. What does this mean for me? You know, what does this mean for my kids? All that kind of stuff. Like the shift from, you know, going to work every day to homeschooling and working from home and all that. After a few weeks of that, people settled in pretty easily. It was very interesting. Anyways, my client load. And now they're all worried about going back because they like it allowed us to reflect. And I'll be very honest, you know, I do teletherapy now 100%. And I think the same way, like oh my gosh, I like it because of the freedom that I've gotten in my life. And, you know, I always look at things as like a learning experience. What have we learned from this? And if we haven't learned anything, then we have more learning to do, you know, but we learn a lot when we're just with ourselves and our lives slow down and we're not over scheduling ourselves or our children. People are really enjoying this life, and the stress is coming with the idea of I have to go back to this thing or this routine that stressed me out and I didn't like. That's what I'm finding in my client population is happening. Really starkly different than, well, probably something different than somebody in, you know, a high zone area like Manhattan or something like that. But I thought I was going to have just completely wired people this whole time, or sad and depressed, and I don't. They're stressing out about going back to the way things were, which I find fascinating. That tells us we have some work to do, you know?
Right.
As a society, we have some work to do. So.
Right. If everything was great before, then we would be raring to get back to it. But yeah.
But we're not. We're dragging our feet and we're like, how can we make this life work, you know, for the long run? That's been my experience. I can't say that's every therapist experience, but that has definitely been mine.
Well, certainly when you have just telecommuting, I mean, or telehealth and having fewer places to drive, if you just take a few of those commitments out, you can get an hour or 2 hours back in your day. And then what can you do with that time? You
know, exactly. That's exactly it.
Your lifestyle.
Well, yeah. And the other part with telehealth now is accessibility. I have people that, you know, hop out of their buildings or wherever they are and sit in their car for an hour and they can go back to work. They don't have to miss out a bunch of time to go talk to a therapist. So it really, it opens up accessibility for everyone. So I don't know, I'm reaching people that I hadn't reached before with therapy. So it's been fast. It's been a fascinating change. I'm just sitting back watching it all.
Yeah, it has been. It has been really interesting. And you mentioned sleep before as a key component of somebody's mental health and their well-being. Mm-hmm. And since we're talking about sleep, what can you tell us about how sleep does affect the brain and how someone who is missing out on sleep might be impacted as far as their brain health?
Well, it's really funny because, you know, everybody, just about everybody goes, you know, well, you got to work on your sleep. And the response is, well, duh, Captain Obvious. Yes, I know. But how do you do that? Right? Like, how do you work on your sleep? Well, sleep impacts, again, we go back to neurotransmitter health. So sleep impacts that. It impacts serotonin and GABA and things that help you relax. So if we're not getting, you know, we cycle through these different sleep phases throughout the night, but if we're not getting to restorative sleep, we are more stressed out. We're less likely to show up to our lives and we've kind of hijacked those neurotransmitters again. So it's pretty much the same thing. Like if we can look at the neurotransmitters, we can look at your melatonin levels, we can look at your cortisol levels, and we can see how all that might be impacting your sleep. And you know, but there are also some super easy things that you can do around what's called sleep hygiene in your bedrooms and with your sleep patterns, getting ready for sleep patterns that are really quite easy that will make a big impact on your brain. And it's funny because a lot of people with sleep problems will, you know, they'll drink alcohol before bed, like a glass of wine to wind down or something like that, or even a big bowl of ice cream. And all that's going to do is destabilize your blood sugar throughout the night. And it will stop you from going through all the sleep phases that you need because it will wake you up with an adrenaline rush at 2 o'clock in the morning. So if I had one thing to tell everybody before sleep, like if you pop awake at 2 in the morning, the biggest thing I'm going to tell you is this. Do not eat something sugary or carby before bed. Eat a protein snack instead. Or if you don't like protein snack, eat or drink like an herbal tea with a little collagen protein mixed in. You will stay asleep all night. And then once you do that, go ahead and give it a try with a bowl of ice cream and see if it keeps you up. And then you'd be like, oh, it did. My husband and I will actually look at each other because it'll be like 8 o'clock at night. And I'm like, I'm hungry for some ice cream. And he'll be like, are you sure you want to do that to your sleep? And I'm like, I don't care. Caution to the wind, right? I don't care. And so then we'll get ice cream and then we'll wake up in the morning and go, that was the worst night's sleep I've had in a long time. It's like, yep, I did that to myself. It's
right. Like, but sometimes you need those reminders, right?
Well, once you know something, you can't unknow it, you know?
You have to relearn the lesson though.
Over and over. And sometimes ice cream just feels good, you know?
Right.
But yeah, I mean, if that's, you know, one thing that people can do is that like stabilizing blood sugar is really good for mental health and really good for sleep hygiene. If that's the only thing you want to work on that, because that doesn't feel overwhelming, do that, you know?
Right. And you're not talking about like a low carb, like keto.
No, I'm just, right?
That can affect serotonin too,
what the stuff that I talk about. Okay. So, I mean, we have such a huge diet culture. You know, like try this diet, try that diet, you know, keto, Atkins, whatever it is, like all these new things. I'm just saying, if you can stabilize your blood sugar levels by reducing some sugar and eating more protein, you're going to stabilize your life. Most people with mental health issues and sleep issues also have what's called reactive hypoglycemia. And if we can get that under control, you're going to feel exponentially emotionally better. And that's not like a diet, you know, that's just, it's a way of life. It's, and again, that's one of those things. once you figure it out and you pair that together with, wow, you're right. When my blood sugar is all over the map, I feel terrible. But when it's good, I feel a lot better. You know, if your anxiety, depression, or sleep is 10, meaning terrible, and stabilizing your blood sugar can bring that to a 7 or a 6, that would be way better.
Right. And anxiety kind of throws appetite signals all out of whack too. So
does depression.
Are eating differently. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Eating differently and reaching for different foods. And I know when.
Usually carbs and sugars.
Right, like, right, right.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, usually that's what you're, and a lot of people say, well, I don't really have an appetite, you know, when I'm feeling anxious or depressed. I'm like, that's totally fine. You know, I operate with good, better, best, and sometimes it's just good enough. You know, get a decent quality protein shake that you throw a straw in and drink it. That doesn't require chewing. That doesn't require prep work. It just requires sucking on a straw. And that might just be good enough when you're in that dark place to help get you out of it. So, you know, when I'm dealing with people with mental health issues, you know, I can't go in there with you're all in 200% on your nutrition plan, because it would just be too overwhelming. So we have to start with very small, manageable chunks that work for you.
Right. And mm-hmm. if you mentioned reactive hypoglycemia, mm-hmm. is there, if someone said, okay, that sounds like something that might be happening with me, is there a certain test or a certain lab that somebody should ask for? I mean, how would somebody find out if that is what's going on with them?
Well, honestly, there's really two questions. Do you get shaky or headachy in between meals? That's one question. And the other one is, do you get irritable in between meals? So those are pretty decent questions that you can just ask yourself, or better yet, ask somebody that knows you.
Right.
Do I get more irritable in between meals?
Hangry, I think.
Hangry, yeah, exactly. It is hangry. I mean, those Snickers commercials are out there for a reason. But right. I mean, a lot of times, like, we don't have to do fancy lab tests to uncover certain things. When we're in tune to our bodies, you just know. So reactive hypoglycemia isn't like diabetes or anything okay. like that. It's just our bodies are in flux with blood sugar all the time, high and low, high and low, high and low. You know, we just want to avoid the sharp peaks and low, low valleys of that, right? And
right.
So you're not in the hypoglycemic state, because once your blood sugar falls low, you know, this is for everybody, like, then our adrenaline will start kicking in. And when your adrenaline kicks in, you're in your fight or flight. And that's when your thinking brain will shut off. And that's when you do and say things you wish you wouldn't have said and done. And that is also when you get a panic attack or super high anxiety. And when you're in the blood sugar dip down low, that's when you're depressed and you want to sleep. And then you sleep and sleep and sleep, or you're low fatigue, you know, until you eat something. So
right.
all of us go through some level of hypoglycemic responses.
Right. And just to go back to your tip that you mentioned a few minutes ago about a cup of tea before bed with some mm-hmm. collagen protein in it. I love that, because sometimes you don't have a huge appetite for something, or you just want something a little bit hydrating or comforting, and tea is a right. great option. But do you have a recommendation for something, a collagen powder that's plant-based? I think I run up against that a lot, because most collagen that I've come up with is
It's animal,
plant-based. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say that I am not very skilled in plant-based lifestyles too much. So I do have a really cool video that I did on my YouTube channel where I interviewed someone who was very skilled in plant-based life and how you do food pairing for complete proteins and things like that. So I would suggest anyone listening to watch that interview. I was blown away because I had no idea, but I have yet to find, it's hard enough to find a collagen protein that's decent that doesn't like get gelatinous and weird, you know?
Right. Yeah. Are there ones that you recommend?
Yeah. I use Designs for Health, whole body collagen. There's another one called Great Lakes Collagen. That's pretty good too. But that one, make sure you get the green canister of that one, because if you get the orange canister, you're going to make Jell-O. Wow. It's gross. So either one of those are pretty clean sources that I like.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you. Are there other kind of easy things that people can do from home, maybe in the hours before bed, to improve their sleep or resolve some of that anxiety, maybe not nutritional, but other things that they can do?
Yeah, I mean, setting the stage for sleep is really important. And when I always bring our kids in as an example, like a lot of people, I know I certainly did, had very strong sleep patterns for our kids. Like mine was always a bath, a book, and bed. Right. So they always knew what was coming. Right. And so then their body begins to associate those things with going to bed. And, but as we get older, we stop doing those things for ourselves. So one of the biggest thing I tell people is do that for yourself, have an established routine. And also I do love essential oils. Start diffusing some type of an essential oil, a calming oil. A lot of people choose lavender for sleep, which is fine, or just choose something that you find very soothing and keep that going night after night, because then your body, your limbic system, which is your emotional center of your brain, will register that as a calming smell and you will begin to associate that smell with sleep. So that's what we want, is our body to associate certain things with sleep. Right? Instead of my bed now is to stay up and watch TikTok on my phone, you know?
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
And or scroll Facebook relentlessly, totally. You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, I just finished up a series of podcasts on teenagers and sleep, and you made such a good point about, you know, our kids, our younger kids have their sleep routines and their bedtime routines set, and that really helps them. And then as kids get older, people will always say, well, my, you know, teenagers are too old for a bedtime routine. Like, right. But they're really not. They just need to have something that they have ownership over.
Yes.
But there still should be a routine in place. It needs to shift from something that the parents initiate and kind of carry out to something that they are more responsible for. And the thing that I like about essential oils is it's something that's pretty safe that they can do on their own. So like I have a 13-year-old and a 10-year-old, and they both have diffusers in their room, and that's part of their routine that they can kind of be in charge of. They can be responsible for if they want to start diffusing something, you know, as part of their routine.
Yeah.
And it's something that the parent can kind of, as kids get older, like, you know, step back from a little bit and let them start to have ownership over that aspect of their routine.
Right. As you're talking, I'm like, well, I have an 18-year-old, and I called myself a sneaky oiler because I started diffusing in his bedroom, you know, at night, because I noticed that he was staying up a little too late and doing, and he goes,
oh, that's
Mom,
funny.
You think that's going to get me to go to sleep? I'm like, in my mind, yes, I'm believing that 100%, you know, but it's funny because I've been doing that with him for so long that now if he has like a stressed out day, he'll be like, Mom, can you put that stuff in my diffuser? And I'm like, yes, I will. I will do that for you. You know, anything to promote healthy sleep, I'm on it, you know, because it is everything.
Right.
It is absolutely everything. And it feels like, you know, yes, he's an 18-year-old, but it feels like I can still mom him a little bit, you know,
Right. Yeah.
Put some mom touches on it.
Anything that you can do. Yeah. So you said lavender. Are there any like blends or anything that you recommend that help with sleep?
You know, the one that I use all the time is just lavender. And then I use an oil called copaiba oil. Copaiba oil is very good. Impacting your cannabinoid receptors for anxiety, sleep, pain, that kind of stuff. So I diffuse those two together bedside, and I swear by both of them. So I would say give something like that a try. I like to kind of make my own blends, and it's just kind of like what suits me. But those are my typical ones bedside. And it's really funny because if I fall asleep and don't turn on my diffuser, it's like, or if I go to bed and don't turn on my diffuser, I'm like, something's weird, something's off, you know, because that limbic system, it is so powerful to your emotional center of your brain. The power of smell is undeniable. So
right.
Set yourself up with a nice smelling bedroom. And the other thing I'm going to tell people, and people hate this, is put your phones away. Jeez, put your phone down. Like, do not use your phone in bed. Okay. Do not use a TV in bed. No electronics. Put your phones down. It's very hard to do. And a lot of people are like, well, it's very soothing. I do games at night just to wind down. I'm like, but you're really not winding down. You know, you're really kind of revving things up when you play games on your phone or scroll through social media. So put those down too and work on that at least an hour before bed.
Right. And it's not just the blue light. You know, it's not just the light that's in, because, you know, devices have like night shift modes, or people can use blue light blocking glasses
right.
and think that it's okay, that their, you know, screens aren't impacting their sleep. But it's really, and I think especially for teenagers and young adults, but I think for us too, that it's the social aspect of the messaging and the texting that's so activating. It's just, it's mentally activating. And
it's emotionally activating.
It's, when you, it's emotionally when you activating.
Your friend Becky posting something on social
right,
media.
Right.
With you're like, oh, I can't believe she would say that, you know,
exactly.
You get all
so you get drawn into that.
Yeah, and, exactly.
And so, and just for so many different reasons. And for an adult, it might be like checking your work email or whatever. And then you get right. something in it. And yeah, I'm somebody who I can watch it. Like watching TV is, yes, it's a screen, but it's so much less activating than scrolling through my phone.
Well, I will tell you that it took me probably 23 years of marriage to finally get my husband to shut the TV off in the bedroom. I worked hard at that, guys, for 23 years. You know? Yay. Finally, it happened. I know. And my sleep has been so much better.
Yeah, you got to just chip away at it. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
We had the ceiling fan versus television set thing going on for quite a while. So, yeah, I won on both of them, by the way. The ceiling fan is on and the TV is off. So.
Wow. Yeah.
I know, well, right? It only took me 23 years. I am persistent.
Yep. Yep. Those are big wins though. Yes. Yeah. Congrats.
Thanks. Too funny.
Well, is there anything else that you wanted to mention about ways that people can protect their sleep, especially during stressful times and as things are a little bit uncertain, or how people can help preserve maybe some of the peace that they've created over the last few months moving forward?
I like preserving of the peace. Just, you know, make your bedroom a place that you enjoy being in. That might be for sleep. That might be for, you know, yoga, stretching, breathing, that kind of thing. You know, winding down with some nice breathing or a nice cup of tea at the end of the night, and making sure your blood sugar is stabilized. It's so important. But the one thing I'm going to say is this: start with one thing and then do that for a while and then add something else in there. Again, good, better, best, good enough. If the whole list of sleep hygiene is quite lengthy, and it's also overwhelming. So you just have to start with one small thing and do that consistently and then build from there. And that will help protect your sleep, and that will also help protect your peace.
Yes, thank you. That's such great advice. And that's something that I repeat often as well. Just start with one thing. Mm-hmm. Well, where can people learn more about you?
Hey, you can check me out at drtaralyn.com. That's my website. Across social media, I am on TikTok. It's so fun. Dr. Tara Lynn on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time and your expertise.
Thank you. It was super fun.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this discussion with Dr. Tara Lynn Sell, or Dr. Tara Lynn as she's known. You can find more information about her on Instagram at Dr_Tara Lynn, Facebook/Dr. Tara Lynn, and her websites counselingandrecovery.com and drtaralyn.com. And at her website, drterilyn.com, you can also link to her podcast, the Kick Off Your Damn Heels podcast. You can follow this podcast, Sleep Well, Stay Well, at sleepwellstaywell.com. You can find me on Facebook at By Malia Jacobson, and on Instagram as well at By Malia Jacobson. And you can also reach me with suggestions or questions that you have about sleep at malia@sleepwellstable.com. And I do hope that you'll consider rating and reviewing this podcast if it has been helpful to you. Rating and reviewing the podcast that you enjoy really is helpful in supporting the work of podcasters, especially those of us who are podcasting from home right now and doing our best to keep going, even though life looks a little bit different these days. So next week, I will be back with another episode on Thursday, and I look forward to it. Until then, please sleep well and stay well. Bye-bye.
It's the Sleep Well, Stay Well podcast, now you know. Thanks for checking out the